is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
A democratic president would be better for Africa than a Republican president, because especially given the way the Republican Party is going these days.
That was John Makum Mbaku, non-resident senior fellow for global economy and development with the Africa Growth Initiative at the Brookings Institute, on Africa-U.S. politics. Details coming up also. Kenyan President William Ruto nominates four members of the main opposition party to a new broad-based cabinet. And a poll shows Vice President Kamala Harris taking a marginal lead over Republican Donald Trump on the U.S. presidential race. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. John Makum Mbaku is a non-resident senior fellow for global economy and development with the Africa Growth Initiative at Brookings. He tells me the Africa policy under former President Trump was weak. President Biden's approach has been more robust, and Vice President Kamala Harris would continue the closeness that Biden started with Africa if she were to win the election.
A Democratic president would be better for Africa than a Republican president, because especially given the way the Republican Party is going these days, is looking inwards, has no interest in Africa. I think that it would be better for Africans to help elect a Democratic president in the U.S. because of the fact that the Democrats are more likely to promote better relations with Africa than the Republicans have indicated.
Since you mentioned the Democratic Party, can you actually specifically point out the closeness as well as the willingness of President Biden to actually make Africa part of his agenda?
Well, during his presidency, Biden made it clear that he was interested in helping Africans develop themselves. And of course, you can see that during the presidency of the previous administration, there was no interest in Africa whatsoever. But during Biden's administration, he was able to talk to Africans, and not only Africans here, but also Africans in Africa, and invite some of them to Washington to consult with him and give him an opportunity to understand the types of issues that Africans were interested in, and try to put together a plan to help them improve their economic situation. So I think that during that period, his vice president was also involved in those negotiations, and I believe that if she becomes the next president, I don't see any reason why she would not continue that type of policy.
What else should the Africans actually hope for in the coming election? We're seeing a lot of volatile happenings going on in the Horn of Africa, protests in Kenya, ethnic conflicts in Ethiopia, a civil war in Sudan. Does the presidency make a difference in bringing about at least peace for that area?
Well, I think what we have to make clear whenever we are talking about Africa is that in the end, whether Africa progresses or not must be determined by Africans themselves. There is no messiah coming to save Africa. Africans must save themselves. And you mentioned Sudan. Take Sudan, for example. There's virtually nothing any foreign power, no matter how powerful it is, can do to bring peace to Sudan. Peace in Sudan is going to be determined by the Sudanese themselves. As you can see, there are two generals in Sudan that are fighting each other. And over the last 2 years, experts have not been able to actually understand why the two of them are fighting and killing innocent people. And so anyone who had visited Khartoum, say 10 years ago, and visits Khartoum today, will realize that There is no Khartoum anymore. These people have destroyed Khartoum completely. And so you start asking yourself, what exactly are the two generals fighting for or about? And so one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that if Africa is going to develop, Africans, especially African leaders, have to change the way they look at politics and begin to understand that history will not judge them very well, because many of them have had very destructive attitudes towards their own countries. So you see the same problem in Sudan. You see the same issue in South Sudan. You see the same problem in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Niger, in Guinea. So the question, and in DRC, so the question I always ask myself is that what exactly are these African leaders trying to do? And so, yes, we need the international community, countries like the U.S., the European Union, to help Africa develop. But they can only do so if Africans themselves are willing to live together in peace and develop their own societies.
John Makumambaku is a North non-resident senior fellow for global economy and development with the Africa Growth Initiative at Brookings. He talked to me from the U.S. state of Utah. A Reuters Ipsos opinion poll shows Vice President Kamala Harris taking a marginal lead over Republican Donald Trump, saying Democrats have been completely energized. VOA's Scott Walterman asks Cliff Young, Ipsos President of Polling and Societal Trends, if the switch the Democrats are in the process of making after Biden withdrew from the race is the right decision.
Yes, we're seeing that across the board. We just received a poll out of the field a couple hours ago, and you can see it really in the numbers. Kamala has been helped both in terms of the horse race poll. She's ahead of Trump, as well as in terms of favorability scores, which have jumped six points. So across the board, a lot of energy, mobilization of the Democratic base.
Money is the lifeblood, right? It seems that that has also been re-energized, the giving.
Yes, if anything, it's a leading indicator of this energy. It kind of predates the polls, right? And that's a good way to gauge whether the base is healthy or not in respect to the principal or the candidate specifically. So, yes, money is a very important indicator and very important, obviously, for campaigns in the modern era.
What are some of the other things that we should be looking at in terms of polling data that impacts positively or negatively either campaign at this point?
Yeah, right this second, we're in the eye of the storm, so we obviously have to be careful with the polls. But we typically look at favorability scores. Is there improvement there? Is there improvement in terms of name recognition? Become better known to the population? And obviously, the most important are the horse race numbers. Does that translate into a more sort of efficacious performance for her or for him, that is, for Trump or for Harris, in terms of voting?
That was VOA Scott Walterman talking to Cliff Young, Ipsos President of Polling and Societal Trends. Today, Kenyan President William Ruto nominated four members of the main opposition party to a broad-based cabinet he promised in response to nationwide protests, but activists criticized the new government as a corrupt bargain. The opposition members, according to Reuters, include Finance Minister John Mbadi, ally of opposition leader Raila Odinga, whom Ruto defeated in the 2022 election. In a speech from his official residence, Ruto called the new government a visionary partnership for the radical transformation of Kenya and thanks those who consulted on its formation for the historic gesture of their patriotism. Meanwhile, dozens of journalists joined marches in Kenya today to protest what they see as heavy-handed government tactics to stifle media freedoms, including police attacks on journalists during demonstrations that have rocked the country for the past 5 weeks. The journalists, many wearing white, held placards reading, "Journalists' Lives Matter," "Shoot Not the Messenger," and "End the Brutality," as they staged rallies across several towns and cities in Kenya. Rights groups say at least 50 people have been killed and more than 400 wounded since the protests began on June 18th. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Regional analysts have voiced skepticism about a so-called standby counterterrorism force announced Sunday by West African bloc ECOWAS. The critics say, despite the comments from Nigeria's president suggesting the force is ready for deployment, ECOWAS has not provided any details about its size, base, funding, or mode of operation. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian President and ECOWAS Chair Bola Tinubu announced what he called the, quote, activation, end quote, of a standby force on counterterrorism while addressing African leaders during an African Union meeting in Ghana on Sunday. The force, first proposed in August 2023 after a coup in Niger, is projected to consist of military, police, and civilian components and be jointly sponsored by ECOWAS members. However, ECOWAS members have yet to decide which countries will contribute the personnel and from where they will operate. Tinubu told leaders at Sunday's summit that ECOWAS is exploring options for funding the force. His comments came 2 weeks after three of the bloc's former members, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, announced a confederation, signaling their exit from ECOWAS was permanent. All three countries withdrew from ECOWAS after being suspended from the bloc following military takeovers of their government. Security analyst Senator Iribu says creating a joint ECOWAS force to fight terrorism is a good idea, but questions the regional bloc's readiness.
With Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso pulling up from now their own, it tends to dilute whatever arrangement. Because these three countries are actually the epicenter of terrorism we are talking about. If the ECOWAS standby force on counterterrorism, where is it going to operate? Is it in Nigeria? Nigeria already have its own arrangement.
ECOWAS said it will continue to dialogue with the military leaders of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso and plans to convene a special summit on the future of the bloc. In April, ECOWAS held a counter-terrorism summit in Abuja to strategize on combating terrorism affecting its remaining member states. Sub-Saharan Africa has become an epicenter of terrorism, accounting for more than half of the global terror-related deaths, according to the 2023 Global Terrorism Index report. Burkina Faso suffered the highest number of deaths, with Mali, Nigeria, and Niger not far behind. Ahmed Buhari is a political affairs analyst. He's skeptical about the success of the ECOWAS force amid uncertainty and instability within the region.
I do not see anything new with what ECOWAS is reiterating. This is what we've been hearing for the last 15 years or so. It's been in the conversation. The terror hasn't declined. As a matter of fact, it seems like the terrorists are seemingly gaining grounds and becoming more daring.
Irebu says ECOWAS countries should focus more on improved governance if they want to address the cause of terrorism.
More than setting up a brigade or force on counter-terrorism, so that aspect of non-kinetic measures are what is more needed. But if you check that the root cause of these are non-kinetic issues, like human security aspect, issue of good governance, issue of development, issue of inclusiveness, issue of sound electoral process. These are issues that once it's in place, and even terrorists will find it hard to even thrive in such environment.
It's not clear when ECOWAS will hold the summit on its three former member states. Analysts say the chances of successful dialogue among the West African states are slim, but it is not impossible. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Nigerian military has rescued Ihi Abdul, one of the Chibok girls whose kidnapping by Boko Haram militants in 2014 generated worldwide attention. Authorities say the rescue operation late last month freed 330 other captives and highlights the ongoing efforts to combat insurgents and rehabilitate victims in the northeastern Borno state. Gibson Emeka reports.
Hai Abdul, a Chibok school girl kidnapped along with 275 others nearly a decade ago, is finally free. She spent about 10 years in Sabisa Forest, where she says she was forced to marry 8 Boko Haram fighters and bear them 2 children. Abdul and other former captives were handed over to the Borno state government on Monday after a month of health care and reintegration. Now 27, Abdul explained how she was discovered and suggests some of the remaining Chibok girls may not want to return. She says, soldiers stopped us and asked where we were going. We told them we were visiting, and that is how we were rescued. She says, I haven't met some of my Chibok colleagues. Why others don't want to leave? Now that I am out, I can continue my Islamic education, she added. Although now overrun by security forces, Boko Haram present in Nigeria Northeast inflicted years of terror, girls were kidnapped, forced into marriage, and live in constant fear. Another woman rescued, Fatima Abdul, recounted her harrowing experience living in Sambisa Forest. She says life there is suffocating. There is no food, no water. Even Boko Haram fighters are suffering. And they beat us for no reason. Abdul says she has 4 children by different men. The Nigerian military continuous effort, including this rescue, Operation Adan Kai, aimed to destroy Boko Haram hideout in the Sambisa Forest and restore normalcy in the northeast. Over the past 2 weeks, over 600 victims have been rescued. Mohammed Abdullahi, a Nigerian Navy captain, says the military is taking care of the former captive.
For those that are rescued, our responsibility from the military is that we carry out documentation once they come in. On receiving them, we clothe them, as you can see. And of course, for the children, we also administer, through our military medical team, we administer vaccination and immunization.
Waheed Ishaibu, a major general in the Nigerian military and the commander of Operation Adan Kai, says the country remains dedicated to rescuing those still in captive.
The theater will continue to do its best to rescue the remaining Chibok girls in captivity in line with the strategic guidance of the Chief of Defense Staff and the Chief of Army Staff.
More than a decade of Boko Haram brutality ravaged Nigeria Northeast, leaving tens of thousands dead and many kidnapped, including the Chibok girls taken in 2014. Although not completely eradicated, counter-terrorist effort has weakened Boko Haram and reduced attacks. Gibson Emeka, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Rights groups accuse French authorities of social cleansing ahead of the Paris Olympics by uprooting migrants, sex workers, and others around the capital, undermining promises of making these games the most inclusive ever. The government says it's simply trying to address a long-standing problem. Lisa Bryant has more from the French capital.
An early morning evacuation of a migrant camp on the edge of Paris. Its residents are uncertain about what's next. Abdoulaye Sow, a migrant from Guinea, says authorities told them to come here and they would find housing for them. With the Olympic Games, he says, we can't stay here. They're going to resettle us somewhere. These kinds of evictions are not new. Rights groups have criticized them before. But activists question the size and the timing of this latest campaign, coming right before the Paris Olympics.
How we describe all this, because it's not only this week, it has started long before, it's called, we call it the social cleansing of Paris. So it's basically because of the Olympics, the will to empty the streets of all misery and poverty.
Borsati's charity is part of an activist network called The Other Side of the Medal. It claims hundreds of people have been relocated in the months before the Games. Not just migrants, they say, but also Roma, sex workers, and others are under pressure. Some migrants have reportedly been sent to locations far from the capital, losing precarious jobs and access to social services. French authorities say migrants can choose where they want to go. Adeline Savi is chief of staff of the Île-de-France prefecture around Paris. She says authorities have been doing these operations every week for years. They offer shelter in the Île-de-France region to people living in difficult and unsanitary conditions. She says authorities also send people regularly to other French regions because emergency shelters in Paris are saturated. So they propose to people who have just arrived without any attachments to Paris to try their luck elsewhere. The evacuations come amid rising anti-immigration sentiments in France, boosting the popularity of the far-right National Rally Party. Paris's leftist city hall blames national authorities for not providing migrants with enough solutions. Paris deputy mayor Lamia El Arraj says it's been months since the city hall has asked the government to take control of the situation, which is under their exclusive competency. She says city authorities continue to offer migrants places for shelter and support, but the state needs to take its responsibilities. For now, these migrants will be offered a place to stay around Paris, but they could well be back on the streets when the games are over. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
Sudan's paramilitary leader has announced plans to go to Switzerland next month to attend ceasefire talks arranged by the United States and Saudi Arabia. General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, head of the paramilitary rapid support forces fighting Sudan's army, posted a message on social media late yesterday responding positively to an invitation to talks expected to begin August 14th at an unspecified site in Switzerland. The Associated Press reports that the Sudanese armed forces, led by General Abdel Fattah Burhan, says it has not decided whether to send a delegation. The U.S. State Department said the talks will aim to build on discussions between the two sides that broke down late last year in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Tuesday that the new talks aimed to reach a nationwide cessation of violence, enabling humanitarian access to all those in need, and develop a robust monitoring and verification mechanism to ensure implementation of any agreement. He added that the talks do not aim to address broader political issues. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.